This episode is brought to you by Progressive, home of the Name Your Price tool. You say how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. It's easy to start a quote. Visit progressive.com to get started. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. Hello and welcome to This Day in Esoteric Political History from Radiotopia. My name is Jody Avergan. This day, August 21st, 1921, the largest relief effort in the world up to that point is mounted. After 10 days of negotiation to plan the effort, in early September, late summer, dozens of American ships start arriving in Russian ports, carrying 700 tons of food, mostly corn, which was then used to feed children in cities throughout Russia. This program was starting now. It would run for a while. By the next summer, summer of 1922, the American food program had fanned out across Russia, was feeding some 11 million Russians a day. This food program was largely the work of Herbert Hoover, who in the time since the end of World War I had made food assistance one of his major priorities. He saw it both as a noble humanitarian effort, but also a political cudgel. Food will win the war was his slogan. So let's talk about the U.S.-Russia food aid nexus and also this really interesting part of Hoover's career that I didn't really know too much about. It. I don't think I really thought of him as a food guy. Do we call him a foodie as a result of this? I don't know. But here to do that, as always, are Nicole Hemmer of Vanderbilt and Kelly Carter Jackson of Wellesley. Hello there.
Hello, Jody.
Hey there.
Do we want to start kind of bigger picture with like Hoover and his role in food aid, particularly coming out of World War One? It really was quite a remarkable effort.
Hoover really was known in this era as a kind of, if not philanthropist, then like a man who was out there healing the world in some ways, that he was bringing food to war-torn places, places like Belgium, making sure that Americans economized so that there would be food available to help out U.S. allies during World War One, to make sure that people who didn't have enough had enough, which was really his legacy going into the 1920s.
And I think really bolsters sort of the status of the United States as being like the breadbasket to the world. When we think about the center of the country, all of this production is going into food production, corn, wheat, so on and so forth. So all of that's being outsourced to the rest of the world. And really elevating the status of Americans and what Americans can contribute to other countries.
Yeah, you know, he's under Wilson, President Wilson, Hoover is brought as the U.S. Food Administrator. And then there's a number of programs, Commission for the Relief of Belgium being one of them. But, you know, and then the American Relief Administration, the ARA. And I don't know, in some way, this kind of reminds me or makes me think of the Marshall Plan in a sense, you know, and I mean, such, you know, and we know so much about the efforts in the wake of World War II to kind of rebuild Europe and sustain Europe. And this was a really, this was a massive effort in the same spirit, I think, but focused particularly on food. You mentioned, you know, kind of Hoover's approach to this, and you talked about the idea of economizing this effort. And so he was seen as a humanitarian, but I would say more than anything, he was seen as a pretty good bureaucrat. And this is where, and in these food administration programs, we get the phrase to Hooverize, which is kind of to find maximum efficiency.
And the kind of bureaucrat that wouldn't have been possible in the United States before this moment. Yeah. You have to have a country that is deeply involved in world affairs in order to have this kind of outreach into France and Belgium and ultimately into Russia, but also a federal government that's big enough to coordinate these kinds of national efforts. And this really is a result, in a way, of a progressive movement that had been growing the size of the federal government, but really of this state of total war that the U.S. goes into when it enters World War One. It's not just about building up the military. It's not just about moving troops, but it's about reorienting the entire economy to help fight this war, including agriculture, which is where he's kind of the head guy.
This is an interesting fact to me too, because the famine that Russia is experiencing is not like a result of drought or some sort of, you know, natural disaster. This is basically brought on by war, the Russian Revolution, the Russian Civil War, you know, the railroad systems that distributed food all throughout the country efficiently basically were dysfunctional, and it wreaked havoc on the country. I mean, 5 million people died because of this famine, because of this inability to get food sent to them properly. A lot of this is in Russia, but also in parts of southern Ukraine. And so there's a huge rush to get as many resources and food as possible to people so that more people don't die.
Yeah.
And this is where your analogy to the Marshall Plan really holds up, Jody, because the idea behind the Marshall Plan was if you shore up these countries in Europe, mm-hmm. they won't fall to communism. They won't become socialist countries. And that was part of Hoover's thinking as well, that Russia had just been through this revolution and you needed to stabilize the country lest it become even more radical and spread its revolution even further. And he talks about this, that the food aid was in part to stem the tide of Bolshevism, mm-hmm. that you're fighting not only to save lives, but you are fighting to defeat anarchy, which he calls the handmaiden of hunger. So there was this broader political aim packaged into the relief.
But it is a little more complicated here because the Bolsheviks are, you know, in power and Lenin is like, there's this famine that's taking place. And so, you know, the calculus is interesting, which is, you know, obviously, I mean, you know, there's the humanitarian side of this, which is let's help a country that is experiencing a deep famine. But, you know, it is a country whose government we wouldn't mind failing. So it's a little like helping this country then also helps, you know, our political enemies. Mm-hmm. But the other side of it, and the way I think Hoover sort of squared it, is also saying, well, you know, if the United States can come in and provide humanitarian relief and make the argument that our system, our country is best suited and that the Americans have come to your aid, then that undermines the Bolsheviks as well. And, you know, no surprise, both sides kind of spin this and use this and frame this in whatever way is politically expedient, including, you know, I would say that it appears to be that within Russia, the kind of negotiations to have this food aid program go into place were kind of done behind the main government apparatus's back. And a group of non-Bolsheviks kind of negotiated the permission to make an international plea and have Hoover respond with developing this program.
And he sends tons of food and supplies, actually 4 million tons of food and supplies. I mean, this is $1 billion of relief in the 1920s. Like, that's $1 billion is unheard of in the 1920s. Mm-hmm. So that kind of like constant, you know, huge supply influx into the country. Hoover hopes that this will really be like a boon, a show of good faith, a way of sort of cajoling the Russians to his favor. But I don't think we realize, again, how big this program was. I certainly didn't think of it as being this big in the 1920s.
It's also worth noting that he had a teach a man to fish kind of approach to all of this, which is that he wanted to get food aid there immediately in order to help Russian people who didn't have food. But he also wanted to make sure that he was sending along things like wheat that produce seed that would allow them to begin to grow their own food in fields that had laid fallow and in places where the famine really was rooted in agricultural failure. So there was a long view that was baked into this program. Mm-hmm.
The Russians, you know, as we were saying, kind of remain a little wary of this. They know they need the help, but they, as they negotiate this, there's certain factions within that, even the Russian negotiating party, who are kind of like looking sideways at the United States, saying, what are you up to with these efforts? And it's, again, it's this mix of both realizing that there's a humanitarian effort here and realizing that there's all this sort of deep political diplomacy or, you know, political adversarial relationship going on here, including, you know, one of the Russian officials negotiating this, one of Lenin's officials are negotiating this, says, you know, repeatedly kind of is quoted as saying, gentlemen, we recognize that food is a weapon, you know, and we recognize that there's more here than just food, which is funny because, I mean, Hoover himself had kind of said food will win the war. So both sides are like saying, like, you know what's really going on here, right? But then they're also providing this relief. To paint a picture of how this plays out, you know, the amount of food that's sent to the nursery, but also the amount of Americans. And so this idea that in the 1921, 1922, there are just hundreds and hundreds, thousands, I think, of young American men, many of them who had just fought in World War One, and now all of a sudden they're in Russia doing, you know, kind of soup kitchens and food aid and all this stuff. And it's just quite a place to imagine a World War One veteran finding themselves.
Well, and it has an early Peace Corps feel to it, right? That Americans are going to go there as a show of goodwill. And it's also, I mean, at least part of it is a reallocation of resources after the war. Again, you had this total war. You suddenly had all of this food production in the United States. You had agricultural surplus in the U.S. that could have wrecked and eventually did wreck the farm economy in the U.S. So you're able to get to move the surplus food to reallocate some of these folks who are already abroad to Russia to help out there.
A lot of the ARA workers, the American Relief Administration workers who were sent over there, did feel like they were caught in a political game. They complained of a lot of surveillance and that there was spying, which there probably was, of their activities there. One tidbit worth noting is that 26 of them came home with Russian brides. So there you go.
You
fight a war, you do some humanitarian work, you meet the love of your life, you come back to the United States. It's 1922. What could possibly go wrong back home in 1922? Go next.
What trouble could they possibly get into?
But yes, that is a nice little tidbit here. So as we wrap up, let's talk about the sort of Hoover side of this, because, you know, you read this, you're like, okay, here's this guy who knows how to get food to people who need it in the face of economic desperation. Most people know Hoover as the guy who kind of botched the Great Depression.
I know I'm being
a little, a flip here. But does this say anything about kind of what do we make of Hoover, and why was he maybe not able to mount this sort of similar response on the home front?
I mean, at least part of it is that Hoover had this conservative philosophy that, you know, maybe the U.S. had a role to play out in the world to help starving people, but Americans needed to pull themselves up by their bootstraps, and that private agencies and organizations needed to step forward in times of crises. And so he had all of this humanitarian and bureaucratic and organizational experience, and he kind of sat on his hands because he, not entirely, I mean, we're painting with a broad brush, but, you know, he doesn't put it to use in the same way because he doesn't believe that that's the role that the federal government should play within the United States.
Yeah. And the scale, I mean, when I think about the huge scale that he sent to Russia and the scale of which he's sending aid or applying effort to the Great Depression, is just pales in comparison. He's not allocating a whole lot of money and resources towards relieving the Great Depression, certainly not in the same way that FDR does right after him.
It does get politicized in the moment and then in the years subsequent and through Hoover's administration. And also, you know, well, one specific way is I think Russians start to claim that, you know, Americans are in some way, they start to imply that Americans are responsible for the famine in some way, you know, and so I think that becomes a story that's being told. But, you know, to me, you look at this story, and I think you look at a lot of stories coming out of, we kind of think of the story of the Cold War as beginning in the wake of World War II. And I think you can see that so many of the seeds, so to speak, are being planted here, right? And this cold diplomacy, this skepticism, looking at each other sideways, but also this need to realize that we are two emerging superpowers. And, you know, this incident here really did carry through. I mean, even in 1959, 30 years later, a number of different, you know, regimes later, obviously after World War II, but Khrushchev, when he came to the United States on his famous trip in 1959, talked about the ARA relief and talked about remembering that. But then he also kind of did the thing where he was like, yeah, but that also maybe caused a famine and, you know, like just sort of the political positioning and so forth. But I think this helps us remember to sort of wind the clock back of the Cold War to really after World War One in an interesting way.
I like that. We're going to call it the Long Cold War.
Yeah.
But at least for now, Hoover sort of gets a little bit of a feather in his cap. Maybe.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
I think that's the goal of this episode, is to take a feather and just pluck it into Hoover's cap ever so gently. And if we've done that, we've done our job. But yeah, super, super fascinating. That brings us to the end of this episode. And now when you think Hoover, think food. Food will win the war. There you go. All right.
Food will win the war.
Nicole Hemmer, thanks to you as always.
Thank you, Jody.
And Kelly Carter Jackson, thanks to you as always.
My pleasure.
Radiotopia.